Hi, everybody. I'm Pete. I'm a recovered alcoholic. Grateful to be alive and sober and at a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, a sacred place for me. Very grateful to be here. And I thank Linda for doing all the driving tonight. We just drove up from Seaside Heights, and as you can tell, the weather is pretty hectic. And we were driving up, and the rain was coming down heavier as they got closer. There were accidents and traffic, and Lynn was starting to get a little nervous behind the wheel and a little bit fearful. And I was just so tempted to say, you know, if you're experiencing fear, you're probably experiencing some current agnosticism. And I was afraid she'd drop me off on the side of the road and tell me to walk. So I just coached all the way here. But we're really glad to be here, and I thank you guys for starting the meeting at this time and being patient with me getting here. God separated me from alcohol June 23rd, 1988. I'm a recovered alcoholic. Being brought to this fellowship, found a program in this fellowship, and in that program, my spirit gets awakened, and I'm able to do service by passing this message on. So I'm very grateful to be living in all three sides of the triangle and experiencing this power. My home group is a Way Out group. We meet Sunday nights in Staten Island at 6:45, and it's a meeting that talks about the solution, and lots of people don't like us until they hit a bottom, and then they look for us. And in walking with this big book and talking about this big book, we will catch, if you haven't found out, you will catch resistance on this journey. But I need not pay attention to the resistance, but pay attention to where God directs me and plant the seed so that maybe another alcoholic gets this information that he or she desperately needs and can survive and recover and become recovered because of the information in this book. Many times I've spoken at meetings as well, this looks like a crowd that really doesn't even want to know about the big book, so maybe I should kind of censor my remarks and direct my talk. And that has only got me into trouble. So I no longer water down or gobble this information. Because I know when it was brought to me, I was very grateful to people who didn't do that and just passed on this message. Just want to clear something up. I had a couple of questions after the meeting last week, and I think I had a strange mental blank spot behind this microphone. We were talking about chapter to the agnostics, and I had referred to a question in that chapter and a choice to be made, a question to be answered and a choice to be made. And I referred to the same area passage twice. I was talking about page 53, where our choice to be made, which is God is everything or God is nothing, what's our choice to be? And then I turned around and said, if you look earlier in the book, I talked about a question and I referred to the same exact comment. And on page 47 in chapter to agnostic is the choice, is the question where it says, do I now believe or am I even willing to believe? So just wanted to clear that up. We last left off last week doing our third step, and God willing, we will get through step four tonight. The neat thing about step four is there's a column called the fourth column, and that really is all the manifestations of self, the obstacles in my path that are blocking me from having an experience with this power accumulated. My God did not put me into this world spiritually imperfect and blocked from the sunlight of the Spirit, but I became blocked. I started to worship other things. Things got in my way, obstacles, from allowing me to be integrated with this power. And the great thing step four will do, specifically column four, is uncover those obstacles. I will uncover, discover, and with God's grace, discard. So I have a clear path and I'm integrated with this power and can have an experience with this power. The other thing about column four is I have learned through experience of doing this work more than a couple of times is this, that my fourth column, all action is born in thought, and my fourth column will definitely let me see my mind running and the manifestations of my mind taken out in action. Selfish, self-centered, greed, lust, anger, isolation, whatever it may be. I will see that stuff. All fueled by one word, fear. The great thing about doing four column inventory, if I'm having a real experience with it, is I will get to see by carefully examining column three, I will see how my first three columns with resentment inventory usually turn out to be a complete lie. And it comes down to two things I'm angry with, self and God. If I funnel all my resentment inventory, I will see how my first three columns turn out to be a lie, and it comes down to two things, me and God. I'm angry with me for doing certain things. I'm angry with me for putting huge expectations on everyone in my life, and I'm angry with God because you didn't do what I wanted you to do. It shows up, and I'm angry with Bill. I'm angry with Mark. I'm angry with this one. I'm angry with that one. It comes down to me and God over and over and over again. Resentment, my book tells me, is the number one offender. It also tells me that the great reality is deep down within, not only me, but you. So if I have a resentment with you, aren't I a little bit blocked from the sunlight of the Spirit? If I have a resentment with two people, aren't I further blocked from the sunlight of the Spirit? Times that by 10 or 20, or like my first inventory, there were 200 names, you could see how blocked I was from the Spirit. God manifests in you, God manifests in me, God manifests in her, but I'm blocked from all of that, and I have a sick mind trying to run my life. I have one alternative. Drink. Because I'm so blocked. The need, the great need to continually go through this work, the great need to continually write inventory and seek this power. Because my ego will not tell me what it's doing to me, but it'll certainly show up. I learned about the problem, step one, the solution two, and the decision three to get to the solution. I take action 4 through 9 and have an experience with this power. A book talks about, in doing this inventory, discovering the obstacles in our path. And it talks about how we must be rid of self. Successful living means daily dying. The death of self. We need to experience the death of self. Because column 4, after all I just said, is the manifestations of self. Different manifestations of self showing up. And that stuff's got to go. In fact, if I even answer some questions with what I write down in column 4, I'll further see myself on paper, the different parts of self showing up and running my life. The death of self is successful living. Self has to go, and I can only do it with God's help. So what I do is suit up and show up and submit to this work and let God move me. And on paper, I will see me in action. I will see me across the columns over and over and over again. I come to Alcoholics Anonymous in 1980. I'm brought here. And the pain is so great from drinking. And my life completely in the gutter. I show up and submit here because I need help. I need to get saved. I need relief. I need freedom. Whatever it is, I just know I need to be here. Because my life is killing me. Self is killing the spirit, if you will. There's me, which is I, and there's self, which is the illness. And that was killing me, keeping me in the darkness. And I couldn't get free. So I submit to this work. My question is, every time we're brought to this work, by the way, I don't think we come here, geez, I got nothing else to do on a really rainy night, so let me go to a big book workshop. Let me call up the sponsor I know is going to drag me through this work, and I'm going to experience a lot of uncomfortability going through this work, so nothing else to do, might as well do that, right? We get taken to this book. We get taken to this work. We show up at workshops for a reason. We're taken. And part of it, I have found from my experience, is this. I'm experiencing some uncomfortability. I'm starting to see my life kind of get off the track, and I go through the work again. Why am I doing that? Because what I have come to these workshops for, what I have come to this work for, is to experience death again, the death of self. The question was asked me one time, you come to a workshop, are you looking to die? And I really got offended with a statement. I was, what do you mean by that? And then a real good friend of mine from the West Coast who does this a lot more than I do says, what you're here for is to die. You're looking to have experienced the death of self for successful living. The less self, the more God. The more self, the less God I will experience. That's what this work is about. We go through the work over and over and over again for many reasons. One of them is because the ego starts to reconstruct itself. And I start to get further away from this power, if you will, blocked from this power. I need to go through this work to smash self, to smash ego. Because what will happen is the mind starts to run the show and it will justify any and rationalize any inappropriate behavior that I do and make it acceptable when on a spiritual path it is totally unacceptable. And what I'm doing, little by slowly, is walking right back into a drink. And it just happens. It ain't going to announce. Remember step one, I'm powerless before the drink. It's not going to announce, oh, listen, tomorrow at 10 o'clock, we're going to go ruin our lives. Strange mental blank spot. I'm drunk. How did this happen? The great thing about experiencing this present moment, when self starts to die, we start to wake up to the present moment, is I start to experience less self, less dis-ease, less discomfort. I'm really paying attention and mindful to this moment, to this breath, here with you now, with all the external conditions, maybe not the way I want them to. But we read about the actor who's trying to run the whole show, wants to be the actor and the director. I can totally identify with that. The question to sit with, do I think if I manage my external world that my internal world will become better? Remember, our book says troubles were of our own making. What a great statement of hope and promise. Troubles were of my own making, which means I don't need to go out there and fix everyone else. If I get integrated with this power, my internal condition changes and whatever's going on outside of me, I'm able to walk through. May not like it, but I don't get pushed around by it anymore. Well, the weather's wrong, so my life is not good today. I have a pocket full of money, so I'm doing great today. I don't have money today, so I'm doing poorly today. That stuff is just pot. It's not who I be. So the question to consider is this. If we are present to this moment without judgments, attachments, or trying to interpret this moment, a place where there is no thought required, no thinking mind, aren't we able to be present to this moment? And at that point, be more alive, more useful, and more in touch with everyone next to me, in front of me, behind me, and my surroundings. That place I've experienced, and that's called bliss. I can't will that upon myself. I can't will that upon anyone else. But it will be done for me. And what a great thing, I say that, what a great thing to sit with and get excited about doing inventory with. Because most of us, like me, were bombarded with the external world. Were bombarded with where my mind was taking me, what it was doing to me. And then I get free of all of that stuff. Page 62, I just want to jump back to page 62 for a moment. It says selfishness, self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our troubles. I like you to circle the word root. It says driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity. We step on the toes of our fellows and they retaliate, and that usually shows up in column 2. Sometimes they hurt us, seemingly without provocation, but we invariably find that at some time in the past, we made decisions based on who? On me. Usually fear-based decision, which later placed me in a position to be hurt. But at the time, I could not see that. I was totally blind to that. Until I write inventory, and then I see in my fourth column, oh, now I see what's going on. So our troubles are basically of our own making. They arise out of ourselves, and the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will and riot. But we don't think so. Above everything, we alcoholics must be rid of the selfishness. We must, or it kills us, and God makes that possible. It says there seems no way of entirely getting rid of self without God's aid. So our book makes it really clear about who we have to turn to. I can't be rid of me on my own power. Page 64. It says a business which takes no regular inventory usually goes broke. Taking a commercial inventory is a fact-finding, searching, and fact-facing, fearless process. It's an effort to discover the truth, about me. One object is to disclose damage or unsaleable goods to get rid of them promptly and without regret. And I like you to underline the words get rid. When we go through this work, we're not going to deal with our defects. We're not going to work on them. We're not going to embrace our defects. We need to be rid of them, like bad garbage, soil garbage, spoiled garbage that has to go out. We're not going to leave it in our living room and analyze it. It needs to go, because it will kill me. It says we did the same thing with our lives. We took stock honestly. First, we searched out the flaws in our makeup which caused our failure. Being convinced that self, am I convinced that myself manifested in various ways, and that will show up in column 4, was what had defeated me. And we're going to consider the common manifestations of self, and it tells me the first one is resentment, is the number one offender. It keeps me blocked from this power. It says it destroys more alcoholics than anything else. Not only gets us drunk, it destroys us. From it stem all forms of spiritual disease. And I'd like you to underline the word stem. Our book uses the word root, stem. Bill Wilson talked about having his newfound friend take them away root and branch. We have this tree of illness. And just to prune the branches, just to cut away a few things will not work. What we need to do is uproot the entire thing. The whole thing has to go. We must be rid of this. And God will decide what stays and what doesn't. Our job is to be rid of it. Bill said great words. Have my newfound friend take them away root and branch. Again, they're using the word stem, root. It tells me when the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. Contemporary will have you believe, bring the body to mind, will follow, which is the last thing we want, and they don't pay attention to first thing is the spiritual malady. That's why we do this work. It says, in dealing with resentments, we set them on paper. We listed people, institutions, or principles with whom we were angry. I'm currently working with something called the Sacraments of Penance, which is the 7 deadly sins taken to a level I've never saw before or experienced before. They talk about anger in our book, and I just want to read to you what it says about anger. Anger is open rebellion against God or our fellow creatures. Its purpose and desire is to eliminate any obstacle to our self-seeking, to retaliate against any threat to our security, and to avenge any insult or injury to our person. Anger will insist that I be right. And it will do anything to get me to that place. And that definition is really what anger will do. We ask ourselves why we were angry. In most cases, and I'm going to talk about the 7 areas of self here. In most cases, it was found that our self-esteem, our pocketbook, our ambitions, our personal relationships, including sex, were hurt or threatened. So we were burned up. On our grudge list, we set opposite each name our injuries. Was it our self-esteem, our security, our ambitions, our personal sex relations, which had been interfered with? And on the bottom of the page, it says we went back through our lives, and I'd like you to underline that. Inventory, we don't do back to our first drink. We go back through our lives, as far back as God allows us to remember. And just some mechanics here. We're doing 4-column inventory. First column, we're going to be listing people, institutions, principles. Resentment inventory lists people. Well, what I had to do is this. First time I write inventory, I decide to just sit down and write inventory without prayer. Without a prayer from my Heavenly Father to allow me to be searching, fearless, and moral. I don't need God's help with this. I need God, period. Me saying, God, help me with this is awfully arrogant. Like, I can do some of it, but I need a little bit of your help. No, God's going to do this for me, something I can never pull off on my own. And I turned to God and asked Him for the power to be searching, fearless, and moral. In fact, I wrote that prayer across the top of my page. Father, thank you for the power to be searching, fearless, and moral. I would write that across the page, and I would sit in prayer and meditation and then begin, and the Spirit would move the pen. You ever write inventory and you say, where is this coming from? It's not coming from me, it's coming from Spirit. How else could I be thorough in my fourth column unless it was coming from Spirit? First time I go through this work, though, I sat down without prayer, without meditation, decided Pete Marinelli was going to write a fourth-step inventory after doing my third step, and things got in the way, like maybe I should eat first before I start writing inventory because it's going to be a long night. Maybe I should make some coffee because that's what the other AAs do, so I'll make some coffee, and I should clean the apartment and I have to digest my food and the coffee. I'll watch a little TV. Then I'll write inventory, and then I would fall asleep and never write inventory. Or I would sit down to write without prayer and meditation, and this is what would happen. Well, sponsor doesn't need to know about that, and he definitely doesn't need to know about that. And sex inventory, how much do I really want to tell him? And we're minimize and justify, and I was getting sick in inventory. And I shared this with my sponsor, and I'll clean up the language, but he says, you know, maybe you need to pray and meditate first and ask God for that power. And I did, and I began to write four-column inventory. Many of us, well, some of us write across the page. Resentment, first column. Cause of the resentment in the second column. Third column is the seven areas of life. Affects my. And my fourth column, where rubber hits the road, is where am I at fault? What part did I play? Difficult to take a look at because now I disregard you and pay attention to me. What part did I play that I set the ball rolling? Instead of writing across, what I was told to do and what I've experienced is much easier if I sit in prayer and ask God to reveal names to me through my life. And I do not deny the Spirit. I don't censor. I just write whatever comes to me, and I write my first column. Mom, dad, my brothers, aunts, uncles, school teachers. And it goes on and on and on. I do not say, well, geez, I don't have a resentment with this person that I can think of. They're not important. If the name came to me, there's a reason for it, and it goes on paper. When I get to the second column, I'll find out why this guy or this woman's name was on my first column. So I write, never to be so arrogant as to say, well, no need to write this. I've come across people the first time I wrote inventory, I didn't even know their name. But their face came to me. So I would very easily, simply write a description of this person, and I would worry about it later. The kid in the third grade who was taller than everyone, who always beat me up. Good enough, I put that down. Get to the second column, sometimes the name was revealed. Was it really that important at that point? Need to clear away this resentment that I'm carrying from 8 years old, or 6 years old, or 4 years old, whatever it may be. It was revealed to me, certainly important enough to go down on paper. And I listed all these names. I get done, and the last two things that went down, two items that went down, were me and then God. And trust me, it was a little difficult to write down God on a resentment inventory because I was waiting for the sky to open up, lightning and thunder to happen, and me not see the next day. Because of my old belief systems with God, were revealed to me right in that moment. It pierced through everything. I said, oh, I can't write God on inventory. And it pierced right through my spirit and opened up me enough to see old belief systems are still running the show. I get done with that and I go to my second column. Now, I encourage you not to be stingy with paper. There's plenty of it. So write one or two inventories, the most, per page, so we have room to write. Because you'll be writing more as you go along. Certainly when you sit down in your fifth step and your sponsor gives you some direction, you'll be writing again. In my second column, I wrote the cause of the resentment. Why I was angry with Bill in column one. Why I was angry with Dad in column one. Or Mom, so on and so forth. And I list my causes. Really important that I don't start writing stories in column two because what my mind will do is justify me into being right again. And get sick all over again. Too much to deal with. I start reliving a whole incident in my second column. Our book says Mr. Brown causes attention to my wife, period. Really important, and if I'm praying to this power, for the power to do this, it'll happen this way. I write down specifically why I'm angry with the person in column one. Resentment, boss, cause, doesn't pay me on time. End of story. The rest of my columns will reveal some more. I get to my third column, and they talk about seven areas. Pride, personal relationships, self-esteem, security, ambition, sex relations, and pocketbook. The first time I went through this work, I just listed personal relationships, self-esteem, security, and left it with that. Great information my sponsor gave me because I was so sick. If I started working too far with this third column, I don't know where it would have taken me. The second and third time through the work, I got a great tool that I use with my daily inventory, and that was kind of open up my third column. Pride, how I think others see me. And I write out a sentence. No one should see me, and I fill in the rest of the sentence. No one should see me. Walk into a meeting, I forgot to call my sponsor. My sponsor gives me the riot act. No one should see my sponsor scolding me in front of the rest of AAs. This is a great one. Go to work, the boss gives you a hard time. No one should see my boss scold me in front of the rest of my coworkers. Personal relationships, what I think this relationship ought to look like. Well, I'm married to this woman, or I'm married to this guy, or I have a relationship with my children, and this relationship ought to look this way, and according to my inventory, it doesn't. Expectations again. Security, what I need. My ambition, what I want. This is what I want from this person. Security, this is what I need from this person. Sex relations, not only sex. My role as a man and her role as a woman. Your role as a man, your role as a woman. In this inventory, I quickly look at my belief systems and how out of whack most of them are. I was out of work this last time going through the inventory. I was out of work for a long time. Finally have some work on the horizon, thank God. Well, my sex relations were affected. Not had anything to do with physical sex, but how I felt about me being a man not being the breadwinner. Real men go out and work, steal whatever they have to do to bring home money to the house. Well, who gave me that? And look how it's killing me. Real men do not accept help. We're all John Wayne. We walk through walls. We make money and do not ask for help, do not accept help. Who gave me that? But that was a belief system. Never accept help from a woman financially. Ever. I become less of a man. Who said that? Get to see belief systems over and over and over again. Pocketbook, money. How am I doing with that? Does money, $100 in my pocket, all of a sudden I love everyone? And when I have 20, I don't like anyone? Payday comes. You know how it is. I was a longshoreman for 23 years. The day of payday, everyone was just best buddies. The day before payday, they hated each other. How's that doing? Is money moving you? Are you attached to an external condition? Okay. Fourth column talks about our part, my role. Even though other people were to blame. So let's do a little reading. Page 65, bottom page, it says, we went back through our lives. Nothing counted but thoroughness and honesty. When we were finished, we considered it carefully. And I consider it carefully by really taking a look at columns 3 and 4. The first thing apparent was that this world and its people were often quite wrong. And that's usually what a lot of our contemporary AA meetings talk about. How they did this to me. Column 2 meetings we walk into over and over again. The cause of my resentment, you'll go to a closed discussion, open discussion. From the speaker down to lots of time sharing, you'll hear column 2 meetings. The world is wrong, I'm right, poor me. And then 30 other people will endorse that. To conclude that others were wrong was as far as most of us ever got. The usual outcome was that people continued to wrong us and we stayed sore. Of course, I haven't been awakened. I'm running around untreated. My mind is doing the thinking for me and I've yet to see my part in a particular incident, my part in the resentment. Of course I'm going to walk around thinking, you did this to me still. Sometimes it was remorse, and then we were sore at ourselves. But the more we fought and tried to have our own way, the worse matters got. And we think about the actor at the beginning of this chapter who's trying to run the show. Self-seeking and trying to be kind. Playing different roles in order to get a desired effect. Rather than just being and let God move. As in war, the victory only seemed, underline the word seemed, to win. Our moments of triumph were short-lived. And for me, that always told me, because no matter where I went, there I was. And I was doomed to fail. It is plain that a life which includes deep resentment leads only to futility and unhappiness. To the precise extent that we permit these, so I'm given a solution here. So maybe now I'm just not doing the work and I'm permitting these things to happen, rather than putting pen to paper. Do I squander, do I waste the hours that may have been worthwhile? Why I am not awake to this moment? I'm caught in before and later on. But with the alcoholic whose hope is maintenance and growth of a spiritual experience, this business of resentment is infinitely grave. We found that it is fatal, and I'd like you to circle the word fatal. It is not only fatal to me, but when I'm running around in Alcoholics Anonymous, isn't that sick spirit, if you will, that block spirit, detrimental to anyone I come in contact with? You know what it's like when we're untreated and we walk into the house after a bad day, the husband or the wife is getting it, the children are getting it. The next day at work, I'm not giving a good performance, am I? I'm going to walk into my AA meeting, I don't know what condition I'm going to be in, and God forbid if I'm caught in some traffic on the highway. Everyone's going to know it. It's fatal. People who are around us the most will experience this worse. Our book says in Family Afterwards that years of living with an alcoholic will make any wife or child neurotic. The whole family is to some extent ill. And that's during our sprees also. So this is fatal not only to me, but to people who come in direct contact with us regularly. It says, when harboring such feelings, we shut ourselves off from the sunlight of the Spirit. And this is what happens to us. The insanity of alcohol returns and we drink again. It doesn't say it may come back and you'll have a choice that you can think it through if it does come up. It just says the insanity of alcohol comes back. Next part, we drink again. There's no debate. While I'm running around in AA untreated, ego's running the show, I'm going to think the drink through and remember what it was like. I'll double up on my meetings and make 90 and 90. I'll make more coffee. No. The insanity of alcohol returns and I drink if I'm cut off from the sunlight of the Spirit. Period. End of story. With us, to drink is to die. If we were to live, we had to be free of anger. The grouch and the brainstorm were not for us. They may be the dubious luxury of normal men, but for alcoholics, these things are poison. We turn back to the list. It held the key to the future. I'd like you to underline this. It held the key to the future. It held the key to my future. It, this list, this work, holds the key to my future. It's a very powerful statement. Because what I will see in column four is this. Me being able to get free and the work I'm going to need for step 5, 6, 7, the harms caused and the people I need to see in 9. It's that vital, life-giving and life-threatening if I don't. Life-giving if I do, life-threatening if I don't. It holds the key to my future. How? Because I'm prepared to look at it for the first time. This is a shift in consciousness, by the way. I'm prepared. Before we show up for this work, doing inventory is the last thing I really want to deal with, let alone dealing with me on paper in the fourth column. And now they're telling me I'm prepared. If you underline the word prepared, there's a shift in consciousness. I am prepared. God has made me prepared to look at this list from an entirely different angle. There's a shift that happens. I'm no longer looking at what you did to me, but now I'm interested what I did, how I contributed to this. I'm starting to wake up whether I know it or not. If I'm walking in a crowded Manhattan block and I'm trying to make my way to a destination, it's difficult. You ever been in Midtown on a crowded day or driving? It's really hard to see. You're just trying to make it from place to place. Difficult to see a few blocks ahead. If I go up to a building and maybe look down from the 10th floor and look down, the path I can see is a completely different angle of what's going on. When news people report the traffic, they don't do it on ground. They're always up high. They can see the path. I can see my life from a completely different angle. God has done for me what I can't do for myself. There's a shift. And I start to see my part in every area of my life. I can't do that by talking about my feelings going from meeting to meeting to meeting, or talking about my issues going to meeting to meeting to meeting. This work is uncomfortable. This work demands from me. But you can see when I get on the other side of the archway what I'm going to experience for the first time. I'm holding up a mirror to me, to us, for the first time maybe in our entire life. Regardless of what you did to me, I'm going to set that aside for a moment and see my part. When I was a young kid, there was an adult who did things that no child should ever experience behind closed doors. And I've spoken to many people in AA, and a lot of us have experienced that type of stuff. It's difficult to share. It's difficult to talk about. We think we're the only ones who ever had that done to us. I'm writing inventory, and I come to the fourth column. Where did I set the ball rolling? Where am I at fault? And I stopped, and I called up my sponsor, and I gave him a few choice words about this work. I was not a happy camper going through this work the first time. As you know, I had someone distant in the family who, by the way, he's no longer in the family, but did certain things to me and I was about 8 years old. And you want me to put down where I'm at fault? He asked me, how long ago this happened? And I said, well, years ago, over 20 years ago. I was a young boy. And he says, well, how long have you been hating that person? As every time his name kicks up, I get ugly thoughts about it. And now that I'm adult, physically, I like to go look for him and maybe give him a little bit more than a piece of my mind. And he says, that is what's going to block you from the sunlight of the Spirit. And that's one of your any lengths. And that's what you need to be free of. I'm not asking you to have a relationship with the guy. I'm not even asking you to like him. But you need to be free of the hate. Rubber hit the road for me. I was not prepared to hear that. And I didn't want to hear it. But that was my, and I speak for myself, any lengths. And I had to just be free of hate for this gentleman. And I was. It was done for me, and I will tell you, it was a lot of work and a whole lot of inventory to be free of hate. What your any lens is, if you've experienced that, I don't know. But that was mine, and I share that because that question has come to me at a lot of these workshops I do. Hey, when I was a young person, this is what happened to me. You want me to write where I'm at fault in the fourth column? I didn't do anything wrong. And I didn't. I didn't do anything wrong except hate this guy for years and years and years, and it was going to be something that was going to keep me blocked. And God moved me past that. God moved me past that. Okay. It says we're prepared to look at it from an entirely different angle. We began to see that the world and its people really dominated me. I can have a resentment with someone, and I can move to the other side of the country. Guess where they are? On the other side of the country with me. A resentment, I attach someone to my hip, and they go wherever I go. Never free. Geographic change is not going to work. You know, wearing different clothes or going to different meetings because that person is at that meeting, or dressing different, or whatever I try to do does not free me of that person. I have a resentment. That person follows me wherever I go. In that state, the wrongdoing of others, fancied or real, had the power to actually kill. How could we escape? We saw that these resentments must be mastered, but how? They use the word fancied or real. Did you ever do this? You get up in the morning, and you're ready to go to work, and you start thinking about someone at work that you really don't like too much. They never did anything to you. In fact, they don't even know you. They just didn't say hello to you. But you're figuring out ways that you can get them fired, you can beat them up, you can slander them, we can gossip about them. You're just not feeling really nice about this person. They don't even know my name. What's going on? My thinking mind's having a field day with me. So there were people that I wrote down that they were living in a completely different town than me, but I knew them and I didn't like them because of something they didn't do for me. Like maybe acknowledge me or maybe even worship me. We'll see how we want to be worshipped when we do this work. We don't want to be liked, want to be worshipped, especially in relationships, until we get past that, and then we're able to embrace good relationships. We cannot wish them away, these resentments, any more than alcohol. This was our course. So they're going to set us on a course here, a path, a direction, for the first time in my life. We realized that the people who wronged us were perhaps spiritually sick. Though we did not like their symptoms and the way these disturbed us, and I like you to underline this, they, like ourselves, were sick too. So many times I would say, well, this person is spiritually sick like I never was or maybe currently am. They're the ones who are sick, never me. And the statement tells me they, like me, may be spiritually sick. We ask God, and here's my resentment or anger prayer. We ask God to help us show them the same tolerance, pity, and patience we would cheerfully grant a sick friend. When a person offended, I said to myself, Father, this is a sick man. How can I be helpful to him? God save me from being angry. Thy will be done. It says we avoid retaliation or argument, and let's make that for what goes on in my mind also. The arguments we have in our mind, the retaliation we have in our mind without ever acting it out. We wouldn't treat sick people that way. If we do, we destroy our chance of being helpful. We cannot be helpful to all people, but at least God will show us how to take a kindly and tolerant view. I like it underlined, kindly and tolerant view of each and every one. I'm going through this work again the second time, and I get this job from being a longshoreman to working in a white-collar industry. And it took me, I don't know, about 6 months to understand what the word as per means. I'm a longshoreman, and I have these words like as per. I thought they were talking a different language or something. But here I am thrown into this white-collar industry, and I'm used to doing things a certain way as a longshoreman. And now that's not appropriate for a shirt and tie kind of suited up atmosphere. And there was one gentleman there who reminded me regularly that I was a longshoreman working in his backyard, so to speak, and that he graduated university and I didn't. And I certainly was disturbed by his behavior and his words. Well, I go through this work and I write inventory, and his name showed up. And I was able, with God's grace, to get past that, to be taken past that. And you want to know something? Here's, and I realized it into it when it was happening, that I was able to be of service to this guy and be helpful to this guy because we had to travel to different universities to recruit many times. And I found myself being of service to him with nothing between he and I. And I realized that when it was happening that, wow, I got taken past that because a few months prior, I couldn't even be in the same building with this guy. Did his remarks, did his behavior change? They were modified, but they still existed. The difference was my internal condition was now different, so my external world was not, I wasn't a prey to my external world. I was not living on page 52 anymore. With me? Make sense? Mm-hmm. It says we avoid retaliation or argument. We wouldn't treat sick people that way. We cannot be helpful to all people, but at least God will show us how to take a kindly and tolerant view in each and every one. Referring to our list again, putting out of our minds the wrongs others had done, here's column 4, we resolutely look for our own mistakes. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? Though a situation had not been entirely our fault, we tried to disregard the other person involved entirely. Where were we to blame? The inventory was mine, not yours. When we saw my faults, we listed them. I placed them before me in black and white. I admitted my wrongs honestly and were willing to set these matters straight. They're already setting me up for my 9 step. Willing to set these matters straight. Willing to change what took place. Column 4, manifestations of self. Where I fall short in thought, word, and deed, how my mind takes me to these places. If I was to, in an ideal world, eliminate my column 4 inventory, there'd be no column 3, there'd be no column 2, because I wouldn't be angry with anyone. say that again. If I eliminate all the things that show up in my fourth column, selfish, self-centered, greed, lust, anger, fear, whatever it may be, gluttony, you name it. If I take that stuff out of the equation, column three is eliminated. There's no cause because I'm not angry with anyone. That's how important inventory is. Doing fourth step and writing nightly review and doing daily inventory with step 10. It's life-giving when I do and life-threatening when I don't. Next paragraph. It says, notice that the word fear, and they're referring to page 65, is bracketed alongside the difficulties with Mr. Brown, Mr. Jones, the employee, and his wife. This short word somehow touches about every aspect of our lives. I have found by doing inventory, and I write lots of inventory, that fear seems to always be the catalyst. Fear is behind everything. It comes down to fearful of losing what I have and not getting what I want. It says that it was an evil and corroding thread. The fabric of our existence was shot through with it. It set in motion trains of circumstances which brought us misfortune we felt we didn't deserve. And here's what it tells me. Did not we ourselves set the ball rolling? Sometimes we think fear ought to be classed with stealing. It seems to cause more trouble. Next paragraph says, we reviewed our fears thoroughly. We put them on paper, even though I had no resentment in connection with them. So I'll start writing fear inventory and say, well, I don't have a resentment with this. Maybe not yet, but we still write it. We put it on paper, even though immediately I do not see any resentment in connection with it. We're writing fear inventory, resentment inventory, sex inventory. And then we're going to write about principles and institutions. We reviewed our fears thoroughly. We put them on paper, even though I didn't have a resentment in connection with them. I asked myself why I had these fears. Wasn't it because self-reliance failed me? Self-reliance was good as far as it went, but it didn't go far enough. Some of us had great self-confidence, but it didn't fully solve the fear problem or any other. When it made it cocky, it was worse. Okay. And the question I was asked to consider was this. If self-confidence and self-reliance would have worked, wouldn't I have outgrown fear and never have a need to write inventory again? When I'm untreated, my mind, my ego, will allow me to think that because my external world has improved, by gathering up achievements, by gathering up accolades, by gathering up money or relationships, my mind will tell me, Pete, you're doing great. And it's because of these things that you're feeling great. Nothing wrong with making money, nothing wrong with having a great job and a wonderful relationship, but my dependence shifts from God to those things. And my mind will have me believe that that's what's causing the shift. And as soon as one of those things don't work out, I go right back into fear again. If those things worked, I would never have to write fear again. My mind will allow me, will delude me into thinking that that's what it is. So I have a pocket full of money, and I start to think I'm running the show again. And my third step told me my life is no longer any of my business. I get the great relationship, and I think I'm running that, and I'm the reason for this great relationship. I'm sponsoring a whole lot of people, and I think, well, you're doing great. It's me who's causing all of that. And there's a shift that happens from God-reliance to self-reliance, and here comes fear, and it ain't going to tell you. So if self-reliance, arrogance, self-confidence works, I would never have to write a fear inventory again, would I? But it doesn't work. That's the deluded mind giving me that information. Am I attached to my external world? This next paragraph is a fear. We have a fear prayer in here and what to do. I was told to do an assignment to sit in prayer and then go into meditation. And in meditation, write what comes to me. And this was an 11-step assignment. Write what comes to me. And I would write a lot of things that were God inspired and a lot of things that weren't. Care to others, kindness, consideration, charity, humility, patience, anger, greed, lust. I disregarded those other things that weren't God-inspired and held on to the ones that were, and I would take them into a deeper meditation and work with them. And I worked with that a while. Well, one morning I'm working with this assignment, and something tells me to go to page 68, and I read page 68. I close the book, and I do this assignment. After I come out of meditation, something moves me to go back to page 68. And page 68, from perhaps through outgrowth fear, became a prayer for me, the whole thing. It says, perhaps there is a better way we think so. For we are now on a different basis, the basis of trusting and relying upon God. Thank you, God, for allowing me to trust and rely upon you. We trust infinite God rather than our finite selves. Thank you, Father, allow me to trust infinite you rather than me. I'm in the world to play the role he assigns. Thank you, God, for allowing me to play the role you have assigned. When I write inventory, I will see how I have assigned me a role, have assigned you a role, have assigned God a role, and expect everyone to follow it too. Am I currently doing that? Just to the extent as I do, as I think God would have me, and humbly relying him, does he allow me to match calamity with serenity? Thank you, God, for allowing me to humbly rely upon you and for allowing me to match calamity with serenity. I never apologize to anyone for my dependence upon my Creator. I can laugh at those who think spirituality, the way of weakness, paradoxically, is the way of strength. Thank you, God, for allowing me to depend on you. Thank you, Father, for strength. And the birth of the ages means that faith is courage. Thank you, Father, for courage. I trust my God. I never apologize for God. Instead, I let him demonstrate through me what he can do. I ask him to remove my fear and direct my attention to what he would have me be. At once, I commence to outgrow fear. It tells me to direct my attention to what he would have me be. What does that mean, to be? My experience has been here, present, awake. No matter what's going on, I can be on a crowded train. I can be at a convention. I can be when I'm alone. Present, awake to the moment. Not being shifted by external conditions. Not identifying with what everything my mind tells me. The more I disidentify with my mind, the more presence I will experience. The more I identify with my mind, the less presence I will experience. Thinking feeds off my emotion feeds off my thinking, and I'm never here now experiencing this moment or this power. When I do this work and start to experience this shift, I'm able to be. And that's a promise our book is giving us here, just in step four. It's a huge promise our book is giving us. Now about sex. Many of us needed an overhauling there, and I really think our book was being kind to us when they say that. But above all, we try to be sensible on this question. It's so easy to get way off track. Here we find human opinions are running to extremes, absurd extremes perhaps. One set of voice cries that sex is a lust of our lower nature, best base necessity for procreation. Then we have voices who cry for sex and more sex, who bewail the institution of marriage, who think that most of the troubles of the race are traceable to sex causes. They think we don't have enough of it, or isn't the right kind. One school would allow man no flavor for his fare. The rest would have us on a straight pepper diet. What we want to do is stay out of the controversy of someone's sex behavior, my own sex behavior. No judging. Just put it on paper. We don't want to be the arbiter of anyone's or even my own sex conduct. It says we all have sex problems. And I showed up to my first inventory thinking I was the only person who experienced what I experienced. And my sponsor read this to me and says we all have these problems. And it isn't only with sex. It goes back to my role as a man, a woman's role as a woman, and how distorted and deluded they were, how wrong they were, how I thought men do this and women do that in all areas of my life. Of course, they're going to cause me problems in my current life. In order to be here now and present, and then to move forward with this power, what I need to do is go back and uncover. How can I be present to this moment if I'm being plagued and driven by old belief systems, old ideas, old resentments, old fears that are showing up now and causing me to fall short in thought, word, and deed based on past performance? So in order to be present now, I need to go back, uncover, discover, and discard, and so I can be here present and then grow in understanding and effectiveness to my future where God's taking me. Make sense? See, I could be talking to a prospect or someone at work or someone on the street, and I'm not listening to what they're saying because I'm already listening to what belief systems are telling me about people who are like this or sound this way or dress this way. I need to be free of that in order to be of maximum service to God and the people God puts in front of me, even if it's for a moment. It says, we reviewed our own conduct over the years past. Questions to consider when I'm writing my sex inventory. Where had I been selfish, dishonest, or inconsiderate? Who did I hurt? Did I unjustifiably arouse jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness? Where was I at fault? What should, not could, because if I could, I would, with God's power, but what should have I done instead? First time I write inventory, sex inventory, it was the usual stuff that a lot of us come to our first sex inventory with. Things that no one was going to read about. In fact, when I wrote my first inventory, my resentments, my fears were this big, big block letters across the page. You can see them from across the street. When I got to inventory, it became this little squibbly writing on the page that I couldn't even read to my sponsor because there's so much shame attached to it. So many old belief systems attached to it. And my sponsor, being awake at the time, saw that and had me go home and write more inventory on that. He says, you're still shameful and embarrassed by some of the things you had no power to control, stop, regulate, or anything. You were prey to your illness, and this is where it took you. And he showed me, he says, what should have I done instead? I could. Second time I go through inventory, sex inventory changes because now it's more about relationships. Third time through inventory, someone asked me, does your sex inventory have to do with, and he talked about the physical act of sex, and I says, none of it's on there at all. Nothing. And I realized at that moment how God has moved me. It had to do with personal relationships with others. Being in a relationship. And that really set me up for the prayer they talk about here with our goals and our ideals. Inventory is vital, life-giving when I do it, and life-threatening when I don't. And I saw that in a simple statement by his question and my reply. It had nothing to do with sex. It had to do with relationships, a man's role and a woman's role. There was a huge shift after three inventories. Done for me, never could I do that for myself. God moving me. I was also able to see in this inventory how I used the word friends for acquaintances. I had them mixed. There's acquaintances, there's people I know, and there's friends. And that got mixed up. Personal relationships. Well, I'm a guy, hang out with a guy, break bread at a restaurant. He's my friend. No, he isn't. Someone I know in AA, we went to dinner. My friends, I reveal inventory to. I discuss personal matters. There was a difference that I learned just in that. Writing sex inventory woke me up to the word friends and acquaintances. It says we got this all down on paper and looked at it. In this way, we try to shape a sane, rational, healthy, and sound, free from defect or damage, solid, secure, ideal for our future sex life. And what I had to do here was write out how I would like my personal relationships be made by this power and offer that to God. I wrote out, if you will, my sex goal and ideal prayer, having to do with personal relationships. I knew where I was falling short in personal relationships, and it was killing me and affecting people closest to me. Personal relationship with another woman, it was affecting her directly. So I turned to this power by having this stuff revealed to me and humbly offered to him, part of my prayer meditation. And then a few months goes by and you start to see things manifest. Things start to happen. Not plagued by what used to plague me yesterday, because I'm here. It says, we ask God, we subjected each relation to this test, was it selfish or not? We ask God to mold our ideals and help us to live up to them. Remember, lack of power is my dilemma, and we need this power from God. We remembered always that our sex powers were God-given, therefore good. Need to be used lightly or selfishly, nor to be despised or loaded. Whatever ideal turns out to be, we must be willing to grow toward it. We must be willing to make amends where I've done harm, and I have, provided that we are not do not bring about still more harm in so doing, and I haven't. In other words, we treat sex as we would any other problem, which means we're going to take it to this power. In meditation, it says we ask God what we should do about each specific matter. The right answer will come if we want it. Again, we turn all things into the Father of life who presides over us all. And I guess for now, because there's a lot more I guess we can be discussing on this, which I really like to do next week and get into a little bit further with our fourth column and defects and the obstacles in our path that are blocking us. But maybe we can close for now and throw it open to the floor if there's any questions or comments. And I thank you very much for listening. Any questions? Any comments? Zigo running the show right now. Okay. Hi. Welcome. That's why it's pretty neat when we have an experience with this and we see how the first three columns turn out to be a lie. I'm resentful at this person. Here's my cause, and here's the areas of my life that it's affected. It usually affects every area, but sometimes what will be revealed to us are two or three areas or whatever. And I start to take a look at that carefully. And what I start to see is I need to go through those four columns. I need to go through that work. But the shift is when I see, and it happened to me this last time, it's really about me and God. And I was able to write a whole lot of inventory on just me after doing all of that work and a whole lot more inventory on God. I wrote down some fear inventory. And then I was given a great assignment. Fear of dying, fear of being poor, fear of ill health, and it went on and on and on. Fear of not being liked. Fear of it, all these areas of my life that I was fearful of. And then I was told, why don't you write about the opposites? You have fearful of not having that stuff. What about fearful of having that? I have no power. Now I have power. Fear of dying. I won't die. Fear of being poor. Well, now you're going to have a whole lot of money. That kicked up just as much fear in a lot of areas because now it made me responsible to other areas I didn't think I was going to be responsible for. Pretty neat assignment. Fearful of not having a relationship. I hear that all the time. I'm never going to meet Mr. Right or Mrs. Right. Fearful of not having a relationship. And then we write about fearful of having a relationship. Oh, wait a minute. You mean there's conditions on that? I have to be responsible. I mean, I have to come home now at night. I have to be loyal or responsible. Maybe I don't want this relationship. Fearful of never having money. Okay, fearful of having an abundance of money. That opens up the door to some areas that I ain't too thrilled about having to be responsible to. It was a great assignment. And so I wrote down areas of my life that I was fearful about and areas, and just the opposite, fearful of having that stuff. Pretty neat. Pretty neat. Hi. I got my first column for tonight. Thank you. If I get to a place where I'm able to be awake enough to know that some are driven or untreated and really have no power, choice, or control on what they're doing, then how could I take what they're doing personally? If I walk into a room and there's a brand new drunk, a wet drunk, and I go over and extend my hand to say welcome, and he tells me where I can stick my hand, I don't take that personally. I look at him, someone who's in the grip of the grapes, and in a week or two from now, as they come around, I'll be able to sit down and have a cup of coffee with them and maybe even be of service to them. So why would that change when I'm out there in the rest of my affairs? The guy who cuts me off on the highway and flips me the bird, probably just sound asleep, angry, whatever it is, why would I take that personally? The other thing about what you talked referred to with your husband and certain roles we play, all belief systems, what they do is domesticate us. You know how you train an animal to go out at a certain time, to do certain things at a certain time, to roll over when you want him? And then as soon as you take out his food bowl, he's ready to eat, and he'll do whatever you want. The animal has been domesticated by us, the trainers, yes? Well, belief systems do the same thing to us, even though we may think we're bigger than that. Think about when mom and dad or whoever is not around, and we do things based on what we were told growing up. I'm not talking about running out in front of a truck to keep safe. I'm talking about how we operate in all our affairs. We domesticate ourselves, and no one has to tell us to do or not do anything just on our belief systems. Relieve me of the bondage of self. Step 3 talks about that in a third step prayer. Part of that is being free of that, this self-domestication. Pete Marinelli, you can only do certain things, and you can't do other things. Where did I get that from? Who gave me that? Why am I still listening to it? Why? Why am I still listening to it? Great assignment. We have our name. Pete Marinelli is my name. Great assignment is I take into meditation no name. I do not have a name. I'm a spirit that's able to be. I work with this for a few months. You will see in that assignment how many things we get attached to based on who we think we are because of our name. Pete Marinelli can do this and can't do that, and with it comes my whole basket of my false sense of self. I am this. Pete Marinelli means all of this. And I need to survive. The ego needs to survive, so I accumulate more stuff of who I think makes me. Total lie. And I work within meditation of me, just being me as a spirit, with no name, and I will guarantee you, you will get free of so much of that stuff, because spirit does not discriminate. Spirit will have me be whatever God wants me to be. Well, I can't get out on a dance floor and dance, because everyone's going to look at me, and I can't dance. Who said that? And who's so concerned with me anyway? There's 200 people are going to look at you. Pete Marinelli, that's what he can and can't do, and I got freed of that. And that's just a silly example, but trust me, it took into a lot of my other affairs. What great freedom. Hi. I'm either moved by the spirit or driven by self, driven by fear. My ego will do thinking for me, concerned or attached to everything outside of me. Everything outside of me. It has power, and my ego pays attention to that and directs my actions, if that makes any sense. I talked about the areas of like pride. No one should see me this way. I'm so concerned about what everyone thinks of me. No one should see me less than. Need to be not liked, need to be worshipped. Good, healthy self-esteem, good self-worth, that's a good thing. Taken to the extreme, becomes a liability. Instead of being moved by this power, I'm driven by what my mind is telling me and very, very much attached to everything outside of me. Okay. It's 9:30. We've run over. Thank you for listening. Thanks for keeping me sober.